off the ball.
I said that's really on the outside of his limit. And he hoofed it. I mean, and it just made it. It was on the outside of his limit. But he didn't lose his technique.
Off the ball.
Weeknights from 7 and weekends from 1.
This is OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Gillette. Proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Okay, so Bank of Ireland are proud sponsors of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster rugby. Competition's a good thing on and off the pitch. And that's why Bank of Ireland are celebrating those who never stop competing for their club and for their community. And one of Ireland's great competitors, Lindsay Peat, is with us now. Lindsay, how are you getting on?
I'm great, Owen. Thanks very much.
Let's actually start with that line of never stop competing. I know this is a fairly broad question, but to you, what makes a great competitor?
They never give up. You know, I think I love this campaign and to be involved in this campaign because, you know, anyone who's close to me and knows me, probably I don't have the same personality and competitive nature when I'm off a pitch or a court, and that competitor and that, I suppose, inner warrior was able to help me overcome that. And that's probably the theme of this, that it's so relatable to anybody, even outside of sport, that you just have to, you know, channel that inner competitor to try and push yourself over the barriers that you might face, whether that's in work, in your personal life, or for me in a sporting capacity as well. To because I suppose even through my own career, there's been barriers, there's been, you know, self-doubt, there's been imposter syndrome, there's been questions asked me, and every time I was able to keep reassuring myself and using that competitor and that competitive nature to not let those, I suppose, negatives overcome. And I was able to play on through it. So for anybody, you know, to never stop competing is to never let the negatives stand in your way and halt your progress through life or achieving what you want to achieve through your own life.
When did the imposter syndrome crop up at its worst?
Probably when I started rugby, to be honest. A little bit when I started with Dublin, I remember Jerry McGill kept trying to ring me. And I just wouldn't answer his calls because I was like, I don't know what this chap sees in me that I can bring to an inter-county team. And I knew a lot of the girls from playing them through club, but I'd see them obviously and support them. And I just felt that I couldn't match them on any level. So I couldn't see in myself what he thought I could bring to this team. And eventually he just kept ringing and I gave in. I was like, right, I'm just going to have to put myself out there to prove to him, which wasn't... You know, I had to be very vulnerable to, you know, sort of, you know, basically setting myself up to fail to prove to this guy that you need to stop ringing me because I can't give you anything. And it probably came on the back of having a rocky start when John O'Leary was the manager and I was really raw and only really started Gaelic football again after playing a bit in primary school. So I never really got over that part of it and felt really insecure. And I was like, no, I'm not putting myself back there. And lo and behold, then I get to play in my first year in All Ireland final, and then ended up winning one in 2010, and continued on in through 2014, and then it really cropped up again in whatever about knowing the girls when I was in GAA and knowing people who had my back. Now I was in a totally different world with rugby. Like I'd only really had max 8 games with club, if even. I'd only started during the summer. I hadn't even played with Leinster at that stage, and I went straight to international in the Stoop against England of all teams, you know, and I didn't even know some of the girls to say hello to. You know, I'd never seen them before, and now I'm in this jersey, and I felt so insecure, and I was like, I'm so embarrassed to even be here among these very talented people. And again, you didn't want to let them down, you didn't want to let anybody down. So yeah, it was, you know, imposter syndrome has come up a lot of the time, and it still will crop its head up to. Because you're looking at yourself asking, are you going to meet these expectations that your teammates or the coaching staff or like Leinster, you know, even when I started there or when we went to Twickenham last year when I was, you know, Ben gave me the nod of being co-captain along with Michelle Claffey and alongside our captain Seneniapu as well. You're like, oh God, how can I even be in the shoes of these great players beside me and try and lead by example with a team of players who some of which are more skillful than me and could offer a little bit more. So you're always questioning yourself because you never want to let anybody down. So you just try and not overthink, reassure yourself and keep telling yourself, well, they see something in me that I can obviously bring to this team, and just be yourself. You know, I can only be myself. They've seen something in me. Even if I don't see it, you know, just do what you do.
So you were feeling a little bit of the imposter syndrome as recently as last year?
Yeah, at times they'll come up, you know, especially now rugby has such a deeper pool of players. You know what I mean? You're like, oh God, you know, I'm coming. I suppose now I'm coming, I'm older. I'm like, all right, I'm the older athlete. Yeah, I'm historically, you know, a long career now, 25 years. But I'm sure I'm thinking, right, younger players, like, who the hell does this one, you know, think she is? What can she bring? You know, I'm thinking, right, they're fitter, they're more athletic looking, they're younger. They can adapt quicker in S&C. But, you know, even last year at Christmas, we had a bit of a competition, you know, in-house. So we had a table and I ended up finished top of that. And I won a mug with my picture on it. And it means the world, because you're like, you're not only competing with yourself, you're, if there's any questions there that haven't been actually asked to your face, you know, you are really answering them. And if it's not, you're not really answering them for everyone else, but you're answering them internally. If you're sort of saying, no, what do they see in me? Do they think I'm too old? Think I'm not able? And even on a coaching level, what do they see in me? Are they questioning me? And there's little moments in your career where you're like, you take the opportunity to reassure yourself, and then, you know, the knock-on effect of that is that you hope that you've reassured everyone else around you that you're still a quality member of this squad, and you can offer an awful lot. When we went to Twickenham last year, I had missed the Autumn Internationals with a neck injury. I hadn't trained since we won the Interpros, you know, 5 games on the trot. So yeah, I thought, you know, I'm out of action. I'm older now. Am I going to come back sharp? Then Ben played me at 6, and it's probably one of my best games of rugby I've played in Twickenham. So it was a huge boost of confidence for me. It was one of my best games. It was in a Leinster jersey. And it was also, I don't think people realise what progress Leinster have helped us make in the last 2 years by their support. And obviously the knock-on effect of that is having the support of Bank of Ireland with through all 4 provinces, but especially with obviously Leinster Rugby, and then the knock-on effect of how Leinster Rugby have supported us and making that game a reality. Like, I'd only played in Twickenham once before with an Irish team. Some players may never get to play there. The stadium itself is like Croke Park. It's a chasm. It's fantastic. So to make that game against Harlequins happen, to have it, you know, on YouTube, and to be professional and see exactly like the lads do. Some players have never experienced that. So a huge thank you to Leinster and to Bank of Ireland, because without their support, we can't continue to progress. You know, we can't continue to progress individually and collectively. And so yeah, that's probably one of the pinnacles of my career, and one of my most enjoyable games in rugby and in a Leinster jersey.
What you've been saying there, I think it really underlines just how important internal competition is, as much as the competition against your opposite number on a big match day in the Six Nations or whatever it may be. How much do you often have to, I guess, hype that up a little bit, or even make it a little bit bigger in your head than sometimes it really is, to get the most out of you? And I'm just talking about you personally. I'm sure everybody has their own little psychological ways of getting the best out of themselves.
Oh, listen, I look at the qualities of say whoever's going against, you know, Lou said, but I don't even look at I don't want to, when we get our program out, say for a front row, I don't want to be the best front row. I want to compete with the back rows. You know, that's what I do. You're always trying to bring the bar up so much, and you don't want to be just safe. Like, I don't think for me, and it's hard because you're coming out of your comfort zone to really test yourself, and you're really setting yourself up to fail, and it's happened. And until you fail, really, you don't know what it takes to really succeed. And I know that's confusing possibly or a cliche, but you have to feel the emotion of failing in order to really reap the rewards of the emotion of succeeding. And as I said, like, even building up to the 2017 World Cup, and ever since that, I don't want to, as I said, just be a comfortable within the, you know, margins that they've given us for whatever an international back row or front row should be. I want to be trying to emulate whatever the international back rows are, to be, always be ahead of the game. So you'll always be looking at what it takes on a just basic level to be able to compete, and then you want to surpass that, and you always want to try, because if you're safe, you don't bring out the internal competitor. How could it come out? Because you're not really competing anything, you're just safe. you're really nice and comfortable and someone's giving you a hug, but you really want to push out the boundaries, push out the standards, and that only not only has a knock-on effect on you, but as a collective. And you would hope that that would motivate not only yourself, but others to raise their bar as well. And then, as I said, you're now not just all simmering in a safe zone, you're now outside of your comfort zone, really starting to push the boundaries and improve. I said, I don't want to just truck the ball up and get gain line carries, yes, but I want to be out in the loose as well, trying to do a loop, run an A-box, run a flat line, you know, be out on the wing trying to, you know, mismatch a winger. You want to put yourselves in that position. Not silly, you have to do your job as well, but you always want to be, you don't want to be pigeonholed. You want to always be trying to be better. And as I said, I've been able to do that through sport, not necessarily always through my life in work, or I'd be very probably insecure and I never put myself outside that. And it's only now in later life, as I suppose looking at the end of my career, trying to get ready for maybe, you know, post, you know, retirement, to make sure that I have those tools that I can bring into my own life to remind me to never stop competing, because I think that's when, you know, I really feel that that warrior has maybe left me, or, you know, so I have to, you always have to channel that. So as much as, you know, I'm part of the campaign on a sporting level, I've been able to bring it into my personal life as well, because they have provided barriers, and it's been sport and the internal competition that reminds me to just keep on going and not let those barriers stand in my way.
And has that worked? Has the psychological lessons you've learned from sport helped you on a professional, on a personal level?
Absolutely. It's hard. Sometimes your back's against the wall, and no more than in sport, I have to remember, what did I do? You know, what did I do when Jerry McGill kept ringing me? What did I do when I was in the stoop and I'm in the background? I haven't got one clue of what, you know, the rules of rugby are or the laws of rugby are, you know, and I have to reassure myself that I'm here for something, and I can only control the controllables. I can only be myself, that someone has got me here. Or if I'm in an interview for work, that I display all the good qualities and make sure I can action them in an interview to prove that I'm worth taking the chance on, and that I, you know, I'll work hard and I'll push myself and I'll better myself to make sure I'm the best version of myself to add to this company or this team, or especially add to myself. You know, that's the big thing with this never stop competing, that you have to put yourself outside of your comfort zone to better yourself, you know, and to remind yourself that you're more than capable of taking on these challenges. So it's hard, as I said, it's really hard. I've had to remind myself, I've had to take a deep breath and sometimes say, right, this interview for now isn't meant for me. What can I do if I do fail? Get feedback, be vulnerable, look at the qualities that I might need to improve on, and how am I going to improve on them? So as I said, it's an old head now that's gone through a lot of times where, you know, I have had setbacks, I have had failure, and I've had to be vulnerable. I've had to look in the mirror. I've had to look at myself and strip myself back, and then try and build myself up to be a better version of myself.
It sounds like you're speaking so well about how ready you are for a post-playing life. Do you ever feel that sometimes people are pushing you in that direction, saying, right, time is getting on now at this point. It's only a matter of time before you'll be focusing on things that won't involve talking out for Ireland, for example. Do you feel that pressure at all?
A little bit, right. But like last week when we played Italy, what a way to prove, you know, age is only a number. You know, I turn 40 tomorrow.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you very much. I probably, in my own head, didn't want to be ever playing on an international pitch at 40, because I think it's an embarrassment. And then I have to remember to myself, well, you know, there's world records to be maybe looked at, and, you know, can I surpass what other people have done and be a 40-year-old who's played in a World Cup qualifier, or, you know, maybe make a World Cup at that age? Or, you know, I can put the limitations on myself if I want. And it has been my own insecurity about my age and not having a place in a very young team. I think I'm only one of three or four when we put down our dates of birth are born in the 80s. You know, all the rest are actually, you know, 90s and 2000s. So
why do you feel embarrassed about that? Like, is that not I would have thought it would be a source of huge pride. It's interesting that you use the word embarrassed about that.
I was initially, I suppose, because I feel maybe it's a, you know, a young athlete's world, and I don't, again, it brings you back to that, what can I offer at this age? You know, am I injury prone? Am I going to be slow? Am I going to be, you know, long to recover and anything? And to be honest, last week against Italy, I broke my leg against England. I never thought I'd come back from that injury and play international rugby again. And all of the feedback that I got was, the fitness levels of the team, and especially, as I said, at 39, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm the oldest person to have scored in a Six Nations. So I now hold, I think, a new title, so it's those reminders. It's the reminders of those, overcoming those challenges where you remind yourself, I have to say to myself, Lindsay, no, never stop competing. Don't stop competing, because you still have so much more to give. And until there's a time where really you feel you've done enough or you don't want to give it anymore, then it's on your terms. So as I said, the try last week and the assist with Claire Malloy and really good team try, I was a huge part of that. I really enjoyed it. It does take me a little bit longer to recover than some of the others, but I also am very mindful of what I need to make sure I'm ready to go again. So no, the embarrassment initially is one of the huge words, you're right, but again, it comes back to the campaign and where we probably throw our insecurity and our perceptions of what other people might think on ourselves. And that's what probably a lot of the time with the embarrassment, saying, oh God, imagine what people think as a 40-year-old. Whereas it is a reminder that I still have lots to give. I still get huge enjoyment for competing. And as I said, that competitor coming out and always wanting to be better. And until that goes, really, I still have a huge place and a lot to give in the sporting world, I would hope. And I do have a sense of huge pride, and I just have to, as I said, when the competitiveness, if someone else questioned me to my face, I know the competitive come out and all I want to do is prove them wrong. So yeah, that's where the never stop competing comes out, that inner competitive warrior comes out and says, no, I'll prove you wrong. And that's what has thankfully helped me over my 25 years through four different sports, through probably a lot of people having questions, or a lot of time I have to prove myself, it has come back to, I'll prove you wrong, and that, competitive nature coming in and making sure that I didn't let anything stop me.
You mentioned playing in the front row, you mentioned playing in the back row. Does the assist against Italy not mean you're a wing candidate immediately?
Listen, you and me on are the same opinion. I think that's my next centre. Maybe I work my way out, back row to the centre to wing. So that's the hope. As I said, I never stop trying to beat the boundaries or the barriers that are put up. So you never know. I might be out in the wings.
Can we talk about that injury? Because you mentioned the horrible injury at the start of the year. What exactly happened? What was the prognosis? And how touch and go would it be for you back then to have actually played a game this year?
So I broke the leg, the fibula against England. I went in for surgery. So that was on the Sunday, and I went in for surgery with Johnny McKenna on the Monday in Santry. Got a plate in, and I got a tightrope for my syndesmosis ligament. So all was good, but like anything, when you go under surgery and you get it in, it's how the body recovers. COVID was a blessing in the sense that, ironically, I told Adam Briggs in a text that I'd be ready to go for Italy. And he was like, yeah, you just recover and get yourself back on your feet. And what did I do? But thankfully got to play against Italy last week. So COVID was a blessing in the sense that, the matches were off and I didn't miss any. However, then I didn't have any access to any hands-on physio, any soft tissue. I did get equipment from the RFU. So thankfully I was able to continue in that sense of my rehab. But when you've no physio directing that rehab, I had a bit of a setback probably halfway through. So actually up until camps went back for us with Ireland, it was probably touch and go whether I was able to, the leg wasn't taking the load, so it kept swelling on me. So anytime I had any long distance runs, it just wasn't controlling the swelling, and that was a huge issue I had post-surgery. So as much as lockdown was a blessing, and we had a four-year-old that we had to keep running, getting out and walking, so it was very hard to stay still and try and manage that swelling. So yeah, we just turned a corner, thankfully. At one stage, got a bit of needle, and finally when lockdown was over, tried to release a couple of stuff, got some hands-on tissue work, lots of work with John Montgomery, the physio with the RFU, and thankfully we turned a corner. But as I said, with any big injury like that, with a break, you just never know how the body's going to react. Thankfully, that was my only major injury other than a bulging disc in the neck. I haven't broken any bones, touch wood.
Right.
Hopefully there'll be no more, but and yeah, age comes into that as well with just how the body will recover. So it was touch and go for a long time. I didn't know whether I'd get back on a pitch, but thankfully I'm here with positive news.
How big is that worry then, before you turn that corner, before the needling starts? And I guess, as you say, you had a few setbacks. Do you start to get a little bit existential about your rugby career during those worrying days?
Yeah, because I'll always have that, what sport has brought me, through the philosophy of never stop competing, where it's gotten me, the place I've got to see, the players I've got to play with, the awards, the jerseys I've got to wear, like that resonates, you know, the message through this campaign resonates through my life story, thankfully, and it really has an emotional connection with that, because that's gotten me to where it is. But for the thought of taking sport away and having that resilience probably taken away from me, and having to readjust how I approach things in life and how they'll affect me was tough. And I was trying to think to myself, my God. And, you know, during lockdown, I was able to nearly change how I trained, but I knew everyone else was in the same boat. But if the fact the girls got on the pitch before I did, I think, you know, anyone who knows rehab, it's a dark place, and you really question yourself. You're on your own. You don't have that support network, and that really where the competitive streak, you need to find ways to get it, you know, to get it going again. So even like I had my son on my back trying to do press ups, or I had I was trying to think of ways where, right, okay, the leg's not working, but can I get, you know, can I really increase my gun game? Could I, you know, reduce my body fat? And what can I work on the controllables that will get me through this lockdown, and that when I do get back on this pitch, you know, we're just searching every avenue to make sure I got back on it, really. But there was, I can't lie and say, there wasn't a period where I was really, really down, really didn't think I'd get back in a jersey, and it certainly wouldn't want to be the way I end my career in international rugby. But at the same time, unfortunately, you just don't always have control about how things will end for you. So just tried to stay positive. As I said, it was little competitions. Thankfully, the team as well, we'd have a hit session every week, and we'd again try bring in that bit of competition to get everyone motivated. And as I said, just tried different ways to get that competitive route, so I wouldn't stop, wouldn't lose motivation, wouldn't go to that dark place that it let me, you know, life pass me by, and that if I did get back then, I'd be way behind. So thankfully, as I said, the inner competitor with, you know, the bit of competition kept me motivated. And I said, it can be something simple like, you know, doing chin-ups off my side gate, you know, having my son sit in my back and try and do as many press-ups as I could, you know, squatting with him, wall walks out the back, loads of things. I'm sure if the neighbours looked into the back, they were thinking I was cracked. But it's those little snippets that you remind yourself when you've been here before, like, what can you look back on your sporting career and use the different areas of happiness that you would have brought that competition through, and just engage in them and get yourself through it. And I said, thankfully, never on the other side, but it is that competition that just pushes you to never stop competing with yourself.
Does that help with the imposter syndrome aspect that we spoke about at the top here then? The fact that you've managed to get through this massive hurdle late in your career. Like, I mean, there's been a whole host of incredible achievements, but that is just another in a long list that surely adds to the confidence, adds to the fact that, no, I definitely belong where I am, and I deserve to be where I am.
Yes, it does. But like, as I said, I'm sure everyone in life, I'm sure maybe talking to you, you can look at life, everyone will possibly connect with the imposter syndrome, whether they're going for a job they feel they're not, you know, fully qualified for, or that they can't do, like, or do people really know who I am, or do they trust I fully am who I am? And it takes a long time to get there. And as I said, it's your own insecurities that you're projecting on other people, even though that they mightn't even think that. So it's little milestones, especially, as I said, for me, I suppose, getting older, and as the pool of players deepens, there's more competition, and there's times where I'm like, oh God, I'm not a rugby player, you know, or I'm so much, you know, especially now, like, your players coming in, if you look at the likes of Enya Breen and Bavin Parsons, who are probably playing rugby from a young age, so their skill set is a lot more, it's so much deeper than mine. So I'm still obviously having to reignite and sharpen those skill levels when I come back in, whereas they're a lot more natural at them. So it's even that kind of question, like, am I meant to be here? Do I have to work harder? But it's, I said, the little motivations and the little personal competitions with yourself to remind yourself that, no, I'm here. Like, I am who I am. And if it wasn't for these qualities that you can still bring to this team, you wouldn't still be here. Mm. And the fact that I will drive myself to be the best version of myself. And I said, it takes a long time to strip yourself back. It'll be an overriding feeling of imposter syndrome, but if you're honest with yourself and you strip yourself back and you're vulnerable and you look at what probably qualities you have to remind yourself, yeah, they're good, you know, the team need them, but what are the skill levels or the parts of my personality and my game that I need to increase? Well, that's where I need to be vulnerable and ask for help. So that's where I go to coaches, or I might go to Sene, or I might go to some of my teammates and say, look, geez, you're a great scrummager, your rugby IQ is great, what can I improve here and bring clips? And a lot of us are like, no, I can't, you know, I wouldn't do that. You know, I am doing well here, and look at my carries. And yeah, right, Gran, you might have had 11 carries and they're 11 gain line carries. That's great. But you have 3 missed tackles. You know, you haven't come off the line with, you've left a dog leg. You had 3 penalties in the scrum, you know, so I have to hold my hand and go, yeah. So how do I increase them? What can I do to improve myself? And it's those balance of reassuring yourself that you're meant to be here, but it's also, always trying to better yourself. And as I said, it is that competitor to come out and go, I want to prove you wrong. I am really bad at tackling at the minute, but I'm going to prove you wrong that I can tackle and I'm going to have no missed tackles the next game. So it's little goals, little targets, trying to improve yourself. And as I said, it's a tough ask because, you know, we all have those insecurities where we don't want to be questioned, or we don't want our... the side of us that needs improvement to be pointed out. But, you know, I'm never going to be complete. The day I'm a complete rugby player is the day I retire, because you always have to be improving to better that jersey and to prove to everyone why you've been picked in as the starting loosehead prop. You know, you always have to prove to them why. So yeah, it's those little moments that I would probably step away and think, I'd be in my own world, be very quiet and think to myself, and then make a plan as to how I can, you know, achieve and prove people wrong and better myself. And yeah, it takes time. It's taken that time for me to, I suppose, have a method to, and it, again, it comes back to, you know, with Dublin, what did I do? You know, my solo was terrible when I first arrived. So it was really speedy. I had a really good turn of pace. But I couldn't get away from the defenders because my shoulder was so high that I was really easy to tackle, you know, that way. Right. So then I used to just run up and down the pitch at full speed, trying to really bring my solo down. And I solo right foot and I solo left foot, because again, if I was only right footed, defenders would be able to just put me on my left foot because they'd know I would have no ability to solo. So how can I be the best version? Well, I, you know, bring my solo down, I use both feet, and then I start kicking off both feet. So now they don't know which side I'm going to use. So the same with rugby, you know, are they going to expect this loosehead prop is just going to, you know, head down, you know, try and go through a brick wall, or are they used to a prop that could use footwork, that might engage defence, might give a pop pass off, you know, is out on the loose and might have a turn of speed, you know. So you're always trying to, as I said, come up with, I suppose, extend your armoury that you have so much to offer in combat.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting stuff. And I guess everything you're saying there is evidence of an unbelievable mentality. But it also, I guess, shows the importance of good coaching to keep people in the game. I mean, it's great that you were able to, I guess, self-learn a little bit or identify your own weaknesses. How many people have been lost to sport as a result of thinking they weren't good enough, or having an even greater sense of an imposter syndrome? And perhaps there wasn't the resources, or there wasn't the coaches to actually pull somebody aside and say, actually, if you tweak this little part of your game, you might actually be able to be better at this. And if you're better at it, you might actually hang around in the sport. I guess that's probably a whole other can of worms that I could open there, and a conversation for another day. I did finally just want to ask you, though, because you have revealed that it is Big 4-0 tomorrow. What is the plan? What is it's lockdown 2.0. How does Lindsay Pete celebrate her 40th?
I think just, you know, with my wife and son, just really just having family time, and hopefully back to Zoom now, you know, with my mum and dad and my sisters and my nephew. And I have a present arrived here from a great friend who lives in Birmingham, so that's arrived. And I see the postman give a card before I get on to you. And so, to be honest, just take stock of everything I've done, all the achievements, all the great, you know, people I have in my life. And as I said, that comes true. Like, I wouldn't be sitting here talking today if it wasn't the great people in my life that support. That includes coaching, that includes club, that it really has a big shout out to Leinster Rugby and to Bank of Ireland, who are huge supporters of rugby in Ireland and women's rugby. And, you know, we didn't even get to touch on, I suppose, other barriers of, you know, being girls trying to fight for, you know, stand up and get people to take notice of us. So there's loads of things. And yeah, as I said, tomorrow will just be a celebration of life and being happy and healthy and still being on a rugby pitch and involved in a very happy place that I am. So that'll be that.
100%. And we must catch up again about and talk about all the things that you mentioned there. Just a reminder that Bank of Ireland are proud supporters of rugby in Ireland as sponsors of the four competing provinces of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster. They are celebrating those who never stop competing on and off the pitch. Lindsay, it's great to see you back out on the pitch. Congratulations on your comeback and enjoy the birthday tomorrow. Thanks a million.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.